Sitting across from me is perhaps the perfect guest for April 1st because he has a passionate interest in deception, both its history and its practice. Ricky Jay is not only one of the greatest sleight-of-hand artists in the world today, but a renowned historian of magic, an author, actor, and consultant. He's performed 3 one-man shows, and his books include Learned Pigs and Fireproof Women, Jay's Journal of Anomalies, and Cards as Weapons. He's also acted in films like House of Games, Magnolia, Boogie Nights, Tomorrow Never Dies, and he served as an advisor on others, including The Prestige, The Illusionist, and Leap of Faith. And this summer, he will be hosting Congress of Wonders in Rhinebeck, New York. It is my great pleasure to welcome him back to our show. Hi.
Hi. Pleasure to be back.
Does April Fool's Day have much significance for you, or is that just for the amateurs?
Is it the word no significance?
In your study of the history of deception, do you have any favorite hoaxes or pranks?
I suppose many. I've never been asked to think of one specifically. Well, here's one. In the early 19th century, an amused British man decided to win a small wager. He would make a tiny street in London the most famous place of the day. And he took a street called Berners Street and wrote a series of letters so incredibly clever that on the given day, everyone from the Lord Mayor of London to casket makers to shopkeepers to bank presidents, literally the head of the Bank of England, all wound up on this tiny street, causing an enormous traffic jam and all sorts of crazy repercussions, but as a hoax.
But do you think people like to be fooled, or isn't it embarrassing to be made a fool of?
Well, to be deceived and to be made a fool of are not necessarily the same things. And when you're fooled by a magician, I think that's a truly honest form of deception, because what a magician is doing is saying, I'm going to fool you in advance.
Right, but there are a lot of people who want to believe that they're too smart to be fooled by a magic trick.
You're absolutely right, and usually those are the easiest to fool, but it's true.
Well, I know that often it's a matter of a magician trying to get me to look here when I should be looking there. So I try not to look where I'm being misdirected. It doesn't help.
Well, if someone's good, it shouldn't, yeah.
I hesitated to call you a magician. Is that an insult because it's so often the description of someone who works at children's birthday parties?
Well, I guess I've been battling that my entire life. I usually refer to myself as a sleight-of-hand artist, probably because of trying to deal with that distinction.
But your interests have extended to con men, illusionists, card sharps, freaks, spiritualists, charlatans, and people who defy description. Do you consider them all part of the history of your profession?
Well, not specifically, but my interest is large enough to include unusual performance of almost any kind. I just don't call it magic, but certainly they're often companion, allied artists to the ones that I deal with most.
And you do things that – did anybody else ever do the equivalent of piercing the rind of a watermelon with a card?
I certainly believe I originated the entire concept of cards as weapons. I wrote a book called Cards as Weapons a long time ago, 1977, and I think it was the earliest martial arts parody. The idea of ninja assassins throwing playing cards is something I made up. But now you actually can turn on a film and see that. But it completely, as far as I know, comes from my crazy take on things.
Well, part of the appeal of that stunt is the language you use. You say, the most prodigious of household fruits, and then describe the rind as the thick pachydermaceous outer melon layer.
Yeah. Pachydermatous, if I may. But indeed, yeah. Well, that's part of the kind of thing I want to talk about at this conference in Rhinebeck, which is the difference between being able to throw a card with enough force to penetrate the rind of a watermelon and then the difference of writing an act where each line of patter is something really significant.
So it's a conference. Who is it geared toward?
I think just for lovers of mystery, and I suppose people who might have been fans of mine, it's brand new. I've never done anything like this before, and I don't think I'm likely to do it again. So I'm not exactly sure how to answer that.
Who are the other participants?
Oh, thanks for asking that. I think I've assembled a really interesting group of people. Jules Fisher, the famous Tony Award-winning lighting designer, I think he's won 9 Tonys, is a giant fan of magic and a remarkable designer. And he's
got he lights regular shows. Does he ever work for magicians?
Well, he's lit all my shows, but in general, no. He's a famous Broadway designer, but he knows an enormous amount about the relationship of light and deception. So he's one of the people. My business partner, Michael Weber, who I think is just an incredibly inventive creator of magic and a man who works in the corporate world doing deception and is just brilliant. He'll be there. Jesse Dillon, the director. Will be one of the guests as well, who's done some fascinating things on medical websites and also created amazing videos that have a relationship to the world of deception. A young actor and also sleight of hand artist named Steve Schiffo, who's been in many, many shows around town. And Gary Marcus, a wonderful neuroscientist, who wrote a book called Guitar Zero about learning to play the guitar at the age of 40. And the reason he and Steve interest me in this particular scope is I want to talk a lot about practice. And both of them have very unusual takes on practice. Steve Schiffo did a show in which he played Lenny Bruce doing it word for word, which is a very different kind of acting when you're literally repeating everything Lenny Bruce said in the context of a show, and then
especially
Gary,
since Lenny was often making it up as he went along.
Yeah, sure.
No two shows were the same.
I think that's part of what makes it fascinating that he was able to do that. And then Gary talking about what it's like to seriously practice something that you've never done before, a fairly advanced age.
But let's talk about the Lenny Bruce for a second. Is that magic? Is all acting magic on some level?
I'm not trying to prove a point like that. I'm not going to say that all acting is magic. But I will recall that when David Mamet cast me in my first role, I think I had been in Midsummer Night's Dream for Joe Papp and James LaPointe, but that's the only acting I had done before that. He said to me, I want you to come and lecture to my acting students, and then eventually he wanted to put me in House of Games because he thought that we really did use the same techniques as actors. We used secret information, not to fool an audience so much as to entertain them.
You also talk about plots and tricks.
I do, yeah. I really think the best presentations of magic are not shows of skill, but rather a combination of sleight of hand and a real story.
Now, one of the things you said, one of the participants in the event in Rhinebeck, you said he does deceptions on medical websites. And I didn't want to interrupt you, but that sounds kind of
no,
scary.
No, no, I said he was involved in deceptions, but also he has a website, Libba, which is a really important medical website that has nothing whatsoever to do with deception.
Of course, there's a big difference when you are performing magic or sleight of hand in front of a live audience and whether you're doing it on television or on a film. And film, of course, I could be a brilliant magician because the cotton, I don't really have to have much skill as a magician.
Well, it depends whether the director wants a scene that's cut or he'd like to see a scene that involves telling at least part of a story in one continuous take. And in that case, you would have to be very skillful.
My guest is Ricky Jay. What's the relationship between magicians and con men? Is the magician's job more difficult because he tells you that he's going to do a trick before he does it?
On some level, that's true. There are people who always thought cheaters were a really difficult profession to play, because if you had done something badly, you were in jeopardy of physical danger. But in fact, what you say about a magician saying in advance what he's going to do and have an audience sitting and waiting for that makes it very difficult indeed. A cheater, if he's in a game, let's say a card cheater, he looks around and watches the other people in the game, and if he thinks there's somebody sharp enough, he might not move, and that move is what you call it when he actually cheats. He wouldn't move if he thinks he's in danger of being caught.
Are people willing to play poker with you?
Well, some, I suppose some might. Jimmy Fallon had a hand of poker with me last night.
Without actually cheating, can the skills of magic be used to help your poker game? For example, your ability to read people.
Well, sure. I suppose that's a perfectly that's actually a very good suggestion of a way in which that can help. And also memory. Certainly, memory is one of the tenets of magic.
Well, it's been said about you that you can't remember anything that's happened in the world since 1900.
I think if I could remember that statement, I might agree with it.
But you know everything about the history of magic?
No, nobody can know everything. Well,
you remember all the cards that you've seen, for example, when you're going through a deck?
I've certainly been known to do that upon occasion.
You wrote something once about a con where people were cheating at bowling. How can you cheat at bowling?
Actually, there are numerous ways that you can cheat at bowling, both in lawn bowling, which is what I wrote about in one of my books, but also currently. I mean, you can really, you know, normally you'd have to be in cahoots with someone in the bowling alley, but actually putting grooves into the lanes and balls following certain paths and weighting of balls, there are many, many ways in which you can cheat at bowling.
There, once at a bar mitzvah, a magician took an engagement ring off of a woman's finger without her noticing, and one of the kids asked, "Why isn't he just a thief?" In the end, I would think that a pickpocket is performing a kind of magic, isn't he?
Well, again, the skill set can be really similar, and there are certainly people who perform as professional, entertaining pickpockets, and very often those people are magicians as well.
You were here before, and we talked about how you were introduced to magic by your maternal grandfather, Max. He was an amateur, but he also seemed to be interested in a wide range of magical things, as you are.
Well, he was an enormous influence on me. He learned to play billiards from Willie Hoppe, who was the greatest billiard player of his day, maybe of any day. He played chess, learning from Tommy Ryan, and then eventually wrote the introduction to his book on chess. He was a cryptographer, a calligrapher. Many of the interests that I still have were imbued by my grandfather.
But you obviously took a liking to it from the start. Weren't you already performing on television at the age of 7?
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend anyone watch those appearances, but I was. I was indeed, yeah.
A lot of kids can have grandfathers who know how to do magic and not wind up being able to do it themselves.
Well, I'm sure including the other grandchildren in my family. They were all taught magic, and they all were interested for a year or two and never had an interest beyond that.
You don't believe in revealing how tricks are done, but some magicians like Penn and Teller often do that as part of their act. They let the audience see the mechanisms built under the stage or hidden inside of a structure. Do you think something is lost by that?
I would, as a one-word answer, I would say yes, but Penn and Teller really are a special case. I think what they do is genuinely interesting, mm-hmm. and I'm fans of theirs. I can't say every particular piece of exposure that they come up with is something that I would agree with. But I think they're doing it for a cogent reason, and they do it really well.
And then they always leave some mystery.
Yeah, well, again, that's very much part of it, right?
In one of your books, Jay's Journal of Anomalies, you tell a story about a learned dog, Munito, and the man who kept returning to figure out the trick. That was a pretty famous writer.
Oh, right. Yeah. And he then wrote his theory of the trick in one of his magazines. It was Charles Dickens.
And what did Munito do?
Well, Munito could not call out, but designate cards selected by people in the audience. Or you could say to him, point to the woman wearing the color yellow. And the dog would go over and point to that woman and various ornithological pieces as well, where he identified various artifacts in the audience. And
did Dickens figure out how it worked?
Well, he came up with a theory which was actually wrong. So that's funny, too.
Well, do you ever see an illusion that you can figure out?
Oh, it's one of the great pleasures of life, to be fooled.
Because you have an encyclopedic knowledge of magic. I'm assuming you see somebody say, this is a variant on that thing that guy did in 1902.
Well, of course there's that side of it, but there are always people coming up with things that are fresh and interesting. Michael Weber, my business partner, fools me often, and so do many other people. I shouldn't say too many. It's not the easiest thing in the world to come up with something new, but it's exciting.
You have a company called Deceptive Practices that provides consulting services for movies?
Yeah, that's indeed the company I have with Michael, yeah.
And what are you asked to do?
Well, they can be a wide range of things. In a film like the ones you mentioned, The Prestige or The Illusionist, they deal with specific magic techniques. But there can be very strange things you would never think of a magician for. We once were working on a film called Wilder Napalm. And one of the things we were asked to do was to have one of the actors leave a photo mat. And as he left this photo mat, he had to step on a Post-it note, the note affixed to the heel of his shoe. He was supposed to take four steps forward, have the Post-it note come off his shoe, and then open up so the message on it would face the camera. Now, you wouldn't normally think of a magician being the person to hire to do something like that, but that is one of the things that we did on film.
And that's something that you would have – that's a complicated thing to work out.
Sure.
You also worked on Forrest Gump?
Oh, we did, yeah. We were involved in creating a wheelchair that allowed Gary Sinise to look like he was amputated. But that was a wonderful experience in the sense that Bob Zemeckis used three or four different kinds of deception. Most directors wouldn't have chosen to do that. So the audience, if they came up with a theory of how something like that worked, would suddenly be disabused of it in the next scene because it didn't work in the same way.
Are these the sorts of things you're going to be talking about at Ricky Jay's Congress of Wonders?
Certainly some of them, yeah.
That is going to take place July 11th through the 14th in – where in Rhinebeck? At
the Beekman
Arms. Oh, the Beekman Arms, that wonderful old hotel. Just one more thing.
Sure.
Can you cheat an honest man?
Yes. Indeed you can.
We have information about Ricky Jay's Congress of Wonders on our show page at WNYC.org in case you would like to go there. Will it be tickets for the whole weekend?
Yeah, I think that's the idea, that it's an inclusive weekend, room and board. And
now, you're often described as one of the world's great sleight-of-hand artists. Is there anybody who's better?
Oh, I'm sure there. You know, one should think of magic like they do of music. There are many, many different styles and techniques.
Ricky Jay, thank you so much for being on our show again.
A pleasure, Len.